into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
And welcome everyone to a spoiler room. It's another table for two. The lovely Andrew Shearer has pulled up a chair next to me so we can sit down tonight and talk about a very interesting film that's come out on a little bit more wide release, and it's called Sorry to Bother You. And yes, Andrew, how are you tonight, sir?
I'm good, man, and it is lovely to be here and lovely to be lovely. Hey, what was it? Were we talking like recently? Somebody's like, "What's with the lovely?" Like they didn't understand like why you would call me that.
I think somebody asked that. Yeah, what's with the lovely? And I'm like, why not? You know,
that's because you. Yeah, exactly. It's like he always introduced me to that, and you know, when the question came, I was like, well, wait a minute, I can't be lovely.
Yeah, right.
I can't even see me as a podcast.
You are lovely. I've seen you, you know, at least on camera, on film. So you are a lovely gentleman. So why not call you lovely?
I work at it. I work at it just like everybody else, man.
You've got the skin like Tom Cruise.
I mean, yeah. It's like skin like Tom Cruise. You know, he's probably got one of those chambers or whatever to keep it on. You know what I'm saying? Like, because, you know, they always talk about how Tom Cruise likes to do like all his own stunts and stuff. You know, he's like, actually, that was the mummy. That was actual Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Well, a lot of that is, I mean, he's got the Mission Impossible thing coming out now. And, you know, you look at that too, and it's just like, it's like, how old are you again?
Oh, I know, man. It's crazy. It's just, I don't know. You think like maybe for like his final Mission Impossible, he'd be like, just blow me up, man. Tom? No, man, I mean it. This is all I got. Just blow me up.
I'll strap my ass to some explosives over there. Let the pyro guys have fun. Come on, let's go.
Just pull me up. Top Gun 3, that's what's going to be. That's what it'll be. He's going to blow up in Top Gun 3.
Top Gun 3, Tom Cruise rides an actual live missile a la Dr. Strangelove.
Right? You know, I never seen Top Gun.
Really?
Never seen Top Gun.
Wow. That's a... Well, that, you know, you're not missing too much there, actually.
I seen the porn version, Bottom Gun. But never, I don't know that that's actually a thing. I just made that up. Sorry, man. We're talking about Sorry to Bother You in here. I'm joking about Tom Cruise.
It is now. See, now that you said it, it's here. So,
but sorry to bother everyone with my discussion.
It's okay. Yes, we are talking about Sorry to Bother You. It is written and directed by Boots Riley, premiere feature. And Andrew, would you like to try to give the synopsis for this film?
Oh, absolutely, man.
Go for it.
So Sorry to Bother You is a dystopian comedy. And it takes place in like a very, very familiar alternate future / present, would you say?
Yeah, I'd
it's
say.
About a guy named Cassius. They call him Cash. And he gets a job as a telemarketer. And he finds out that you can move up the ladder in the corporate world. But it gets crazier and crazier the higher up you go. Sorry to bother you.
That's a good summary on this. At least for the main... line going through this film, though there's a lot of stuff that happens in this movie.
True.
That was actually produced in part by Forrest Whitaker. He started his own production company, actually, Forrest Whitaker's Significant Productions, apparently. And he helped have this film made. And yeah, Andrew, let's just start with your initial thoughts when the credits rolled on this film. How what did you think initially about this film as the credits rolled?
I gotta tell you, man, I was so glad that I was sitting in a multiplex theater watching this movie, and there was a bunch of people in there that stayed all the way till the end. I don't know if they liked it. I don't know what they thought about it. It was some whispering, some laughter, some, you know, a little this, that, and the other. You know, their minds were clearly blown. But I was just so happy, because oftentimes when I see something that I feel is groundbreaking, weird, really odd, really daring, really risky, really different, I'm not sitting in the multiplex theater, you know? Or if I am, that movie's about to end up on the Raspberry list.
Yeah.
So I would just kept thinking, I was like, if this, it's got to be everywhere else too. And other people are seeing it as well. And I'm like, that's how cinema, the art of cinema is saved. It's not by sequels. It's not by franchise. That's how it makes money. That's how the industry stays. The art stays by people getting to see stuff like this. Oh man, it made me so happy. I was ear to ear grinning. Very happy about it.
I was ear to ear grinning too. And what's funny is the audience I sat with, now I'm deep in central Wisconsin here. So it wasn't a huge crowd by any means, but what surprised me was I was actually the only guy in the audience. There was about, I'd say, 8 college, females that were part of the audience, which I did not expect to see in the audience, for a film like this. That surprised me, but yeah, everybody seemed to enjoy it. And afterwards, when the credits rolled, I was just like, wow. I'm like, that happened. I'm like, that happened on the big screen in the theater. This isn't at home on some VOD channel or something. That's on the big screen. People are watching this across the country. This is awesome.
Yep. Thank you, Boots Riley.
Yes, thank you, Boots Riley, for this, because, this is a film that it starts off with that you think is going to be kind of your straight comedy almost, in a way. I mean, the way it starts out, because here we have Cassius, who's trying to get a job. He's got his girlfriend, Detroit, played by the lovely and talented Tessa Thompson, in this. And so he goes and he gets a telemarketer job, and I've worked telemarketing, so I could relate instantly as far as the work and, you know, the work that he had to deal with. But they took a great comedic approach with this whole first setup here, kind of setting you up a little bit to what you think this film is going to be. But of course, it's not. But how'd you feel about this first act where we're getting him basically falling through a ceiling and into people's homes?
I mean, it's funny because, like, there's no way I can look back on any scene in the movie and not think of everything that came after it and contextualize it immediately. It's just not. So as you're watching, sorry to bother you, you're looking at it as sort of like, you know, your broke guy underdog comedy, a little Office Spacey, maybe. And you got Terry Crews is the guy whose house he lives in. Cash lives in Terry Crews' garage. I think that's his uncle. And of course, Tessa Thompson. So talented, so beautiful. I love her. I will watch her in anything. Annihilation and Thor Ragnarok. She picks some great movies to be in, right? So I'm sitting there going, it starts to get a little being John Malkovich, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In the way that they're breaking movie rules left and right. And what Mark is talking about is when he cold calls on this telemarketing job, the way that they illustrate him on the phone with people, instead of having it be split screen or in a bubble or this side, that side. When have we seen this happen? He drops, bam, right into the living rooms and kitchens of these people. It's so cool.
It's such a metaphor for it because, in all honesty, when I did, I didn't quite do telemarketing. I worked the phones for a company, and I took orders, you know, catalog orders and that. But there was for a short time before I left that company where I actually was part of a program where we had to cold call people, much like he was doing. To remind them of things and say, hey, we got a sale and hey, you know, it's been a while. And that metaphor was so perfect of him dropping into people's homes, because when I did it, I didn't feel too good about doing it, but I felt like I was invading their home, whatever they were doing at that time, by calling them. So the fact that they do this, I was like, yes, that's exactly how it is.
Sure. And by the same turn, anyone who's gotten those calls, which anyone can identify with either side of this, it also feels like, you know, God, I'm at home. I'm eating. And one part of the people just straight up having sex on this couch. I mean, it's like he just really, really knows. You know what I used to have to do? I worked for video stores. So I used to have to call in the morning everybody that had tapes that were out past the due date. No one is happy to hear from you.
Yeah.
It was the worst. Like, nobody liked doing that.
Yeah, so of course, a couple having sex, I'm like sitting there going, why would you answer your phone during that? But, you know, I guess it's a new age now.
I was going to say, these days, man.
These days, people are like, yeah, okay, you know, hold on one moment, you know.
Right, so you can't be away from that phone too long. But, you know, realistically, who calls anyone anymore, you know?
It's yeah. Like... Yeah. Well, what surprised me, what I did is I went into this movie knowing absolutely nothing outside of that it was getting buzz and people were talking about it and how it was unusual. And I saw some people talking about, oh man, that third act, which, you know, we'll talk about later. But, you know, I didn't know very little about it. So I'm sitting here and all of a sudden, who shows up but Danny Glover?
Yeah. Yeah.
And his Langston character giving some old school advice to our young school, Cassius. And Andrew, what kind of advice does he give the gentleman?
Well, first of all, Danny Glover is like Mr. Potty Mouth in this movie. The movie's got a lot of, but Danny Glover just keeps dropping them F-bombs, man. Everything is F this and S-H-I-T that. I mean, he's saying a lot of fucking shit. So it's funny because Danny Glover, I mean, he's an amazing actor. He's a veteran. He's so good. And to hear him like this, but you know he couldn't say no to a role like this either. Langston advises, hey, you know, if you want to make more sales and do better, use your white voice. And instantly the audience starts kind of nervously chuckling. It's, you know, very, very diverse, usual Athens kind of crowd there. And so two black women beside me, I should say, the entire film. So, like, and I can't not notice what they're laughing at and what I'm laughing at. You know what I mean? As a white guy sitting there. And so, but it's not a matter of Danny Glover changing the pitch or lilt or timbre of his own speaking voice. They straight up overdub him with a white actor, presumably, or somebody who's doing like some sort of white parody voice, you know, the nasally voice. And it's clearly not him at all. And it sounds almost like elf-like or smurf-like. Hysterically funny. And Cash gets really, really good at it. And he starts moving up the ladder pretty quickly at that company.
Well, and I loved how they handled that, too. I actually read some reviews later on or some reports that a few people walked out, you know, when they got to the part of, you know, the white voice and, you know, talked about how white people suck. But I loved their explanation too of the white voice, because he says, no, this isn't the voice of how you sound white. This is the voice of what white people want to sound like.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And first of all, man, if you walked out of this movie, dude, look what you missed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just it's just getting cooking, this movie. But also, white people, for people who have spent decades making fun of anything and everything in the name of comedy and free speech and, you know, being outrageous and whatnot, they sure don't got no sense of humor about themselves, you know? What is the deal? Come on.
Well, I loved it because the way he gave the explanation of, no, this is what white people want to sound like. They don't actually sound like this, nor are you trying to sound like them. You're sounding like the way they want you. And I loved that explanation. I'm like, Yes, because that's how salespeople, many of them, pitch their voices. They don't even talk, you know.
It's fake. Yeah.
You know, they don't talk like that. They talk, well, now, you know.
Oh, man. There was this organization called Professionally Speaking, and they would have actors that sound like good old boys, ones that sound like, to be like, I'm Officer Timpson. Can you spare some money to get us a new bulletproof vest? And people would be like, oh, man, I'm on line with a real cop, you know, but it's just an actor, you know?
Yeah. You know, so I love that explanation. And yeah, Cassius, he starts getting successful. And man, the things that they do, because he's talking about how his success at the company he's working in, and he's got his buddy Salvador, who's been working at this telemarketing company for a while. And they get this scene in the Andrew, what'd you think of this scene? I thought it was an interesting statement on, you know, like VIP rooms at clubs and that. And it really got me thinking. This film, throughout the whole damn thing, I'm thinking. But this one, I'm like sitting there going, you know what, folks? You are missing out if you leave early, because they aren't just talking about racial things here. They're talking about status things here. Because what they get in that bar and he goes, oh, that's a VIP room. But what happens when he gets in that VIP room, Andrew?
Dude, that VIP room sucks so bad. It sucks so bad. I mean, he can't even move, you know? Didn't somebody, like, knock his drink over with their butt or something like that?
Yeah, he gets drink actually spilt on him.
It's just so not. To care. Yeah, it's just, it's nothing. It's not all that, you know? Like, just such a, there's so much metaphor throughout this movie. I mean, it's just, everybody talks about Hereditary, having to see it more than once. I could watch Sorry to Bother You every day till I'm dead and get something different out of it every time. I mean, it's just so much going on there, you know?
Every scene, if people think, because I've seen people talk about how, you know, the story meanders, which it evolves as it goes along, yes, and it covers different subjects as it goes along, but I get the feeling that nearly every scene of this film, every sequence is calculated
and
thought out and specifically approached to get a message across, but at the same time, not sit there and slap you blatantly in the face with it. It's still getting pretty blunt, but at the same time, I guess, you know what I'm trying to say is that it's thought out with very specific care. So every metaphor, every little visual, every little nuance has a purpose.
Yeah. I mean, we can't not tap dance around issues of race in 2018. We can't. No. You know, it's like, it just has to be. You can't, the time is over for you to be like, is this about race? Just do it, you know? And what I love about Sorry to Bother You is Boots Riley kind of came at it seeming like, hey, if I don't get a chance to make a movie ever again, I'm just throwing everything at it and I'm doing my best. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is an amazing debut because of all the different things going on there and all the different things that it is saying. Because at the same time as Cash is moving up the ladder in his work, they're starting to unionize and they're organizing a protest. Steven Yeun's character, Squeeze?
Yeah, Squeeze.
Yeah. He's starting to, you know, he's organizing a strike from all the workers in the bottom floor. And I think it just happens right before he gets promoted, before Cash gets promoted.
Yep. Yeah, they organize a movement, a hang up basically, so where none of them answer the phone at all to organize the strike. And we learn as we go along that also Cassius' girlfriend, Detroit, is part of this left eye movement who's against this big corporate machine called, I forgot, oh, what was it called? Good Life or Live Well? I feel horrible. I forgot the name of it. But it's a company. Worry Free. Worry Free Life. And you look at Worry Free Life and I'm sitting here going, you know, this film is not just about race. It's about class, because Worry-Free Life, you look at what they're doing, they're living in prison.
Yeah. All right. Let's describe Worry-Free in the way that they drop it into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
You see it on like TV commercials and stuff, right?
Billboards.
And billboards and all these things. That's how they bring it into existence in this film. And, you know, it's like, it's almost like, you ever talk to someone who works at the like Amazon warehouses or UPS or any of these things?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, they're like, it really, really sucks. It's terrible conditions. It's terrible pay. So they combine this idea, like, you know, same thing with people that work at Walmart. You know, there's a little bit of a Walmart in worry-free as well. It's like, all right, well, in today's economy, where everyone is just one illness or, you know, car accident or away from complete financial ruin, the idea of having a job for life, a place to live for life, guaranteed meals a day, and people would so do it. You know, this isn't Idiocracy, where we've got like this sort of pessimistically nihilistic, misanthropic view of the future or whatever. This is very, very plausible and creative, but very well informed by, you know, what is already happening. So, Detroit, a fantastic character in many or many respects, because she's also an artist and she's surviving as one. And we have to talk about her performance piece as well.
Oh yeah, yeah, don't, definitely.
But yeah, that's all kind of part of it. I love the way they tie it all in there and give you your little pieces as you go. Did you feel like it was getting a little Repo Manny?
It had a little bit of a feel to that, I will say.
I thought so too.
At least a spirit of. I'm like, not completely, but it did have a Repo Man type feel to it.
When he hooks up with Mr.
Yes.
That was when I start thinking about Repo Man, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because, like, what their real job was.
Yeah, because he ascends and he finally gets into the elevator, which is talking about his sexual reproduction and such, which is hilarious.
The gold elevator to the next floor.
The gold elevator to power cellar, you know, and he gets up there and, Mr. Or they beep it out. He's played fantastically by Omari Hardwick, and he's the only other, black guy up there, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's using his white voice all the time. And it's like, yep, you're up here now. You got to use your white voice all the time. I'm just like, yeah, oh, that's, man.
That's true.
I'm like, here you have, you know, this image of this gentleman, you know, getting successful. And here you have to have him, you know, use his white voice now that he's ascended all the time. You know, it's just so much being said in this stuff. It's, you know, and he's really good even when he gets to be power seller. When he goes up to the top, he's making it big, you know. Yep. And Lakeith Stanfield, I thought, did fantastic.
Yeah, you know, the only thing I knew him from was from Get Out. You know, he's Andre, you know, the guy that's in the beginning that shows up later is Logan King.
Right.
The groundskeeper, whatever. That's, you know, that's all I knew him for. And here, of course, he looks completely different with his facial hair grown out and whatnot. But he was wonderful. I love the little conversation he has in the very beginning with Detroit about death. I mean, the movie does so well given how outrageous the concepts, themes, and visuals and all of this narrative that it introduces. It does so well in making you identify with this guy, making him very much an everyday person. He's not, like, you know, a broad stroke kind of hero. He's not like crazy, sarcastic, quick-witted guy. He's, you know, he's very relatable for the audience.
Yeah, he's a character that you could relate to. And again, I'm sure some people are like, we're all, you know, it covers race things or what. Yes, it does. But, you know, looking at it, I'm like, they executed this very well to get their point across, while at the same time, I don't think directly attacking anyone. Am I off on that? I mean, they're making statements, but you know what?
I'll say this, man. No, I do. Hey, if you feel like attacked by a movie like this, probably it's a counterattack.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're that person.
Yeah, because I loved how the issues were addressed and presented. And I mean, you know, we get that character who, I thought Armie Hammer, I'm like, I can't even believe that's Armie Hammer playing Steve Lift, who of course is trying to play like a Bill Gates type of Steve Jobs type of really rich, eccentric kind of guy, only, you know, a lot more crazy.
I thought that was neat because the first time I ever saw him was in the Facebook movie where he was the buddy of Zuckerberg. He played the douche twins or whatever their names were.
Yeah. Yeah. And
so it was neat that he's playing a guy kind of like that.
It was cool that he played, you know, a guy kind of like that. So, but I mean, it's showing because I'm like, yeah, I've seen people like that. I've actually met a few people like that. You know, the eccentric part. But again, I felt issues were being addressed and subjects were being brought to the forefront. But at the same time, it wasn't making it personal. If that makes any sense, you know, I was digging it. I'm like sitting here going, especially what I found interesting is the people who were trying to unionize to get better wages in that were completely against the Good Life, people, you know, that company. But at the same time, if you think of the concepts they were doing, the philosophies, they weren't that much different.
No.
You know, it's just one was a little bit more than the other. You know, so you got that aspect where you're covering unions and how they're addressed, you know, one form of, I guess, socialism versus another where you have these slave laborers, basically, where people sign contracts. Oh, they don't sign contracts. Of course they do. You find out to basically work for this company. The Good Living Company, or I keep forgetting their name. I apologize. But
worry free.
Thank you. But so amongst all this, so we're covering, you know, how this gentleman needs to get ahead in life. Well, he's got to use his white voice of that. So we're covering, you know, that. Then we're covering the socialism and union subject, and then worked into that. We work on our obsession with YouTube viral videos and crap TV.
Oh man, there's only like three things people watch in the world of Sorry to Bother You. Am I right? It's like the news and the worry-free MTV like kind of channel where they have the great parody of Cribs that shows where the people of worry-free live. Old people remember a show called MTV Cribs where famous people showed off their houses and how well they live. Yeah. And here they've got their own version of that on a Worry Free's channel where it shows this poor homie. He's like in his uniform, looking like everybody else in the shot with their bunk beds where they eat their dinner off a tray. And he's all trying to act like, there's my crib. Oh, God. But look at what it's saying about, you know, like materialism and capitalism and, you know, just our whole measure of what success is. Mm-hmm. Or how people measure themselves as a success or failure based on, you know, employment. It's like, God, just the way that they do it, you know, so great.
Entertainment, because you mentioned the two things. You got the worry-free
TV. There's one more.
You got the news, and then you got get the shit kicked out of me.
Yes. Which
is basically a show, folks. It's a game show where people come on and get the shit kicked out of them.
Yeah, it says viral reality show. I Got the Shit Kicked Out of Me is the name of the show. And it reminds me kind of like of, I don't know, more of like a fail blog and, you know, things like that. But now people just, they go on the show just to get beaten up, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, one hand you could look at it going, oh, well, this is just ridiculous or whatnot, but makes you wonder what motivates people to get on there. I mean, have their lives become so horrible that in order to feel like they're living or something different, they just come on a show and get the shit beat out of them just so that they feel something?
I mean, this, like Cribs, is kind of a little bit of an older reference to shows like the Jerry Springer show, which a lot of people, again, don't know what that is. But yeah, they would just be on television for the sake of entertainment. Just completely dehumanize themselves.
Right.
And often, you know, violence was a component of Jerry Springer.
And in this surreal kind of alternate yet, you know, coming up Tuesday world, you have this viral video that we happen to have of Cassius, who ends up getting hit in the head with a cola can.
Yeah.
And the video goes viral, like 9 million views. Like, he's just popular as hell. Here is an individual who was just trying to get to work during the union riot, and he gets tagged in the head. And at first you think it's because it's in a form of protest by the protesters, and he just happens to be a victim. But he isn't. It turns out he is completely the victim of a PR campaign.
Yep.
I was like,
not that far-fetched.
I'm like, wow, that just summed up a good chunk of videos on YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, thinking back to the early days of YouTube. Yeah, back in my day, when I first started, and there was the Lonely Girl 13, I think it was, or Lonely Girl 15 episodes, where it was a blog, and it was a girl just doing her blog, and it was well lit. And she'd occasionally have modern music on it, but everybody was like, oh, wow, this is great. And she got really popular. And then a few people started looking between the cracks and going, wait a minute. And it turns out her entire blog was scripted and she was an actress.
Yep. I remember that.
And that came to me while watching this, when it gets revealed that, yeah, Cassius, who's just trying to make it in this world, gets dinged in the head by a cola can, not because of a form of protest, but because a representative for the cola company was promoting their product by hitting him in the head. Talk about a metaphor.
I know, for real.
Oh, man, it's so many layers of things. Like, I mean, Danny, you know, and there's some odd things too, like you get Danny Glover, who he's in the bar drinking, and they pull out the whiskey, and he goes, no, give me the good stuff. And they open this little door on the whiskey, and there's a little bottle in there. And it's in there. It's out of nowhere. I mean, this world that he lives in is so surreal. And you mentioned it before, and I think it's a good time to talk about Tessa Thompson's Detroit. She's a performance artist who makes these really great art pieces, but she's also a performance artist. Andrew, what'd you think of this whole scene where she gets up there and has people throw things at her? I'm like, there's people that actually do this.
Yeah, this was one of three scenes in the film that really put the audience on their ass. It was Detroit's performance, later Cash's performance when he is forced to rap at the Worry Free party.
Oh, God, yeah.
The place went dead. And then, of course, the reveal of what I think it's a Regal View, which is the power caller company, what it is they're really selling their experiments, we'll call them.
Yes, that's a good point.
So, but yeah, Detroit's art. She's basically like almost completely naked on stage with sunglasses on, and people are throwing cell phones at her. That this is all like part of it. She's got this big thing of old cell phones, and then there's little breakable water balloons full of sheep's blood, right? Was it?
Yeah, sheep's blood.
While she recites over and over again a line from the film The Last Dragon. Yeah. And at first it seems odd, and then it seems like, you know, almost like kind of an assault to watch this woman be hit. And then you're just sitting there going like, this is freaking amazing. I'm not even sure how to feel about it. But it's like being confronted by art, you know? The questions you got to kind of ask yourself, is she degrading herself? Is this like, I got the shit kicked out of me? Is this like what Cash is doing with his company? I mean, what's really going on there? I think it's kind of up to you to figure out how you feel, but Cash does not like it. And he tries to stop it.
Cash cares about his girl too much, though. At this point in the movie, they had broken up because she just couldn't handle how materialistic Cassius seemed to have gotten, and well,
he left the union behind. And,
yeah,
you know.
Well, he left his friends in union behind for success because he was good at it. You know, which was an interesting dilemma in and of itself, is here you have an individual. He's good at what he does, but should he be doing what he does, even though he's good at it?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the whole idea of selling out, you could do a whole week's worth of podcasts about this notion of selling out. You know, this is a term people always will use. They used it when I was a kid. They use it now. Being a sellout, what does that mean? And how quick people are to use it.
Well, and it relates back to Detroit with her performance art. She's trying to say something, but is the audience really taking it as she's trying to say something, or are they just taking advantage of the fact that they get a chance to throw shit at someone?
Exactly, which is why then what happens later with Cash at the party with the rap scene, I just feel like it was kind of almost meant to kind of mirror that a little bit in its way.
Dude, I felt so bad for him. I'm like, oh my God, because here we have Steve Lift surrounded by just a bevy of hanger-ons and you know, models and everything, because
he's having an eyes wide shut party in there.
He's having pretty much an eyes wide shut party in there. I mean, he is like the pinnacle. He's like the embodiment of like excessive success, you know. I mean, you know what people, I shouldn't say what true, but what people have images of when you have success, it's in this room, like he's practically like on a throne with people all surrounding him, just adoring every word he says. Cassius comes in and they have him, for one, sit on the ground by himself with no one else around, like in the middle, exposed, all these people looking at him, and they ask, well, where he's from, and go, oh, you're black, so you can rap. And he tries to tell them in five different ways, I can't. And they make him, and I felt so bad. Like, oh God, it's just awkward.
Yeah.
You know? And then I loved how it dawned on him, though. This is why I love this film, because you're continuously thinking, at least I was, it just continually kept your mind going, well, where is he going to go? How's he going to get out of this or whatever? And then you see the light bulb above his head as he realizes the crowd he's actually in, that even though he's successful as many people there, he is not their equal. He is there to be the token guy. So fuck it. What does he rap?
He starts screaming the N-word over and over and over again into a chant, and all these white people are saying it. And it's this whole thing of like, again, I cannot remember who was on stage recently, and there was a white person in the crowd that was like yelling the N-word of their lyrics. And they, you know, it was a very, like, very important kind of what they call teaching moment.
Right.
But you think about back to when you were a kid and you heard like N.W.A., Two Live Crew, like a lot of music that used that word a lot in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like white people really jumped on that music. I know I did.
Yeah.
And like, the idea of like yelling that word along with the people in the song, kind of like, does that give you permission as a white person to use this word you're not supposed to use? It doesn't matter what's the context, even if you're, you know, singing the lyrics along with it. We don't get to say that word.
No.
And to see it shown so explicitly, he keeps saying over and over, and the more he says it, yelling it to this beat, the more the white people in the crowd just start singing it louder, louder, louder.
Because it was giving them the false feeling that, oh, it's okay for me to say this, because he's saying it in a song to us, and he's asking for us to respond. So yes, we can say this. This is fine for us, when it's not. It's still not. But he realizes that's exactly what they were looking for. They were looking for a validation to be able to use that word.
So how the Wisconsin audience, how the temperature of the room feel during that? Because I know even in Athens, it was like, whoa, you know?
Yeah, it got silent. I mean,
because it's clear what they're addressing there. There's no mystery to it.
No, there is no mystery to it. In fact, don't they have a conversation later on about the word, about, you know, how it is different if you use it versus, you know, I thought that was in this, maybe not, but
I don't remember it being.
But the song, when he said that, I'm like, damn.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's just saying so much right there, just like a lot of stuff in this movie. And then it leads to this scene where he's just sitting there and there's just this debauchery everywhere. All just these people, just sex everywhere. And he just wants to do nothing but leave. But at the same time, he knows where he's at, he can't, because it could be detrimental and he doesn't want to necessarily risk that. But then he gets called into a private meeting with Mr. Steve Lift. And this film, man, this is where it went another direction entirely with the horse people.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, it's pretty clear at this point in the movie that, the power caller status that he's gotten, his whole other echelon of the company that gets up to the next floor, Regalview, they're like weapons manufacturing. They're doing like human labor.
They run the worry free. They're running the worry free facility, which actually is slave labor.
Yeah, exactly. But where are they, like, in case you didn't get that, where this movie dots its I's and crosses its T's is Cash has done some cocaine with Steve Lift. Is that his name?
Yeah, Steve Lift.
And he's looking for the bathroom. He runs into a screaming person in a bathroom stall that is not a person. It is a freaking hybrid, half human, half horse person that is like, help me, help me. I mean, at this point, everybody was just laid out. Even if you don't get right away what it's saying, you know, mm-hmm. you know, the equisapien, I think is what they call it.
Equisapien.
Yeah, about, you know, what we do with animals and oxen and horse, beast of burden, as they're called. The idea of genetically, you know, just manufacturing human beings that are like the ultimate slave labor, which is crossed with that, and not even to get into this country's history with slavery, period, of human beings. That part there is just like, it went there. I mean, we go from a weird ass comedy, it's like edgy comedy, to like dystopian sci-fi, I would say horror.
Yes.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely horror. Definitely horror with the way they handle the equisapiens. It is a horror because these individuals have been changed against their will, basically. They weren't I shouldn't say completely against them, but they were not expecting this when they signed on. And it could very well have been against their will, too, but the scary thing about that, just like a lot of stuff in this film, is it's two beats away from you going, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Making the workhorse, basically. Making an entirely new species genetically modified to be the stronger, for lack of a better term, workhorse. Workforce is what they were creating. They created them, the equisapiens, to be the better worker. They didn't make them to be better people. They made them as a product to sell.
Yeah. But did you think about like steroid use and athletes at all?
Oh yeah.
You know, because like the NFL and the Major League Baseball and, you know, those kind of scandals involving the players who, you know, somebody makes a ton of money off of them, you know. Do you think about that at all?
Oh, that ran across my mind when they were talking about how it affects different people differently. You know, the powder that helps change them.
Yeah.
You know, how it affects them differently. Yeah, it definitely had that steroid vibe to it of them genetically modifying these people equating to, you know, people taking steroids so they can perform better.
Yeah.
Be better performers. And the concept Steve Lift has is our man, Cassius Green, he's talking about changing him into a horse person to be for, oh man, when he said to be the Martin Luther King of horse people, I'm like, oh, wow. I'm like, you
that's
get
the go for broke moment.
It's showing you this guy, our gentleman, our hero, Cassius, has made it on his own. And here you have this billionaire, basically, who wants to immediately exploit his success to help keep his new workers in line, basically, is what it is. He wants him to be an inside agent. And I'm just like, man, they went there.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, like you say, it just keeps going and going, that onion, man. It just, the layers keep peeled and peeled, and, you know, it just, it makes increasingly clear its point. And you just can't, by the time he mentions Martin Luther King, I mean, you just, you know, you think about the way white people use and twist Dr. King's words and legacy today, all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not hard to see what it is this movie is saying. And even if you don't really think about that or know about that, these images and these words and these names and these situations, they're just going to hit you somewhere. Mm-hmm. And they're just going to hit you somewhere. That's, they're designed to.
You will see something either in the real world or in yourself, even a little bit or whatnot, out of something in this movie, which is what I think makes it so good, is that it makes you think, and at the same time, it's just right there putting it out for you, going, look, this is an issue. And, you know, if you go through this entire film, regardless of who you are, what race you are, if you go through this entire film and don't relate or see something, then you're not paying attention, I think.
Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And, Cash, like, you know, he does make it out. And I think he goes to Detroit and his phone, which he thought he was missing, it turns out it sent her a video. And it's like a distress call from the Equisapiens, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and, yeah, it ends up he dropped his phone in where they keep the Equisapiens, and Steve Lift is there talking to him and basically prodding them and disciplining them. And so Cassius, who has grown in popularity because of getting hit in the head with a cola, goes on the most popular show and says, yeah, I want to show this video, but it ain't that easy.
No, you do have to get the shit kicked out of you to get the video for them to play it.
Which made sense, because at first I'm like, oh man, but then I'm like, it made sense, because even though he's our hero, what he did, even with the best intentions, you know, of leaving his friends behind and that for success and that, you know, there had to be some kind of consequence.
Yeah.
You know, so he had to go through a little bit of hell to get to be the hero. Basically, as if he hadn't gone through enough already, but you know what I mean, right? Is that he did leave his friends behind, and so he kind of makes that sacrifice of going on, I get the shit kicked out of me, to get the video across to go, look, here's what they're doing.
Yeah, and it just, the momentum then for the very end of the movie is just like build upon build. You've got like, you've got a riot between the union people at the place there.
Yep.
And, you know, Cash comes back to, you know, apologize to his friends and to get back involved. And I think, you know, he gets, then there's a, God, there's like a big police clash with the Equisapiens, and the cops get into it.
It's, well, yeah, just,
God, yeah. This whole thing.
Yeah, because at the end, he does switch sides back, which helps make the news, which he knew it would. And they use Detroit's art to keep the cops and the scabs from crossing the picket line. And then you find out that he's actually teamed up with the Equisapiens and figured out how to free them. So they show up and they start fighting the cops.
It's awesome.
And it's just this maelstrom of everything that has been built up during the rest of the movie has comes to this point. And even at the end, even when you think it's going to be a true happy ending, not quite for Cassius.
Well, I mean, they give you a total freaking Rod Serling ending.
They do.
I mean, they, you know, Cash, who's been worried that the powder he snorted was going to be like the gene modifier powder. Just when you think everything's kind of cooling off or whatever, it turns out he's got the horse face starting.
Yeah.
You know, and then next thing you know, he's leading the Equisapien revolution, and they make it back to Steve Lift's mansion, right? And they're starting to like freaking tear it down, you know?
Tear it down and looking for him to tear apart, basically.
Oh, God, so good. I mean, I'm a big fan of Twilight Zone.
Oh,
I love it. And the whole name of the game of Twilight Zone is get that kick-ass ending. And the audience, they've been put through so much because Cash has been put through so much. You don't want to lose your empathy, you know? When they saw his face change and all that, it was just, people were like, oh, God. That was when I was by that point going like, yeah, we were all watching this movie together. And I felt that way before when going to see stuff that somehow made it.
Yeah.
You know, Mother was one, Only God Forgives was one. Mm-hmm. You know, occasionally it does happen. And, you know, of course, the people in the audience are like, what is that? You know, like if someone were to hate or dislike or just think Sorry to Bother You was okay, I mean, what leg would they have to stand on? What's the argument against this movie? Because I think it's brilliant.
I think it's brilliant as well. It's so well put together, so thought out. It's different. You can't categorize it. When the credits roll, you'll still feel bad for Cassius.
Mm-hmm.
You want him to get that because it's got that Twilight Zone ending. And now that you mention it, this whole movie plays out like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah.
In a way, you know, with that spirit, that the way it progresses to where it's making statements in a very in a surreal world that is just slightly off center from where we are today. But if you just lean a little bit, you could see it being today.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm so happy with it, and I just can't imagine. I mean, I know people who seem to just really just parallel. They dislike everything that I like. I mean, I know people just run differently than me.
Sure.
And I know a lot of times they think being a contrarian is interesting. And so they'll be like, oh, it was too heavy handed. I wish they would have pulled back a little, or, you know, they went too far. I mean, what's the value at this point of not going too far when you're in a film like Sorry to Bother You, which from the very beginning is getting outrageous as part of its art, you know?
Yeah. No, it's definitely an art piece, but I hesitate to use that because when you say, well, it is an art film, people compartmentalize it in a specific category then, and it's so much, you know, it in a negative way a lot of times. When you say, oh, it's an art film, well, that just turns people say, oh, well, it's just... No, but it is very artistic. It's so well put together that, you know, it's one of those films, like you said, you could rewatch again and again, get something different, notice something different every time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if you're disturbed or upset by it in any way, or if you're just like, oh, it made me think, I didn't come to the theater to think, the title of the film is just so perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The title of the film pretty much sums it up, going, you know, this is the film that we've given you. Sorry to bother you with this, but this is what we've got. You know, this is the way things are.
Yeah, this is the truth, like it or not.
Right? And the thing is, people out there, too, they get this impression that there can't be room for both films like this and your normal popcorn turn your brain off film in cinema. And I think there's room for both. I think you need films like this, but I'm not saying just because I support this film, I'm not saying you have to have every film like this. Yeah, you know, in fact, I almost wouldn't, because it would take away the impact of a film like this.
We think about like 1999. And I talked about this before with Amy from the Bloodlust podcast when discussing films of the 90s. 99 was a year where a lot of risks were being taken and a lot of movies were coming out that were really kind of out there, because there was this kind of general feeling that maybe the world was going to end. And I know you remember this.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
And that's why we got our Malkovich, and we got our Fight Club, and we got our Matrix, and we got our American Beauty. I mean, there was a lot of... You know, things were getting a little out there for major studios to be making, you know? Mm-hmm. And what I think is fantastic about the release pattern of Sorry to Bother You, and the fact that it did come to you guys and came to the multiplex where I saw it and didn't just go to art fart theaters, is that the people, it's not going to necessarily be preaching to the choir, because, you know, the art house crowd is very different.
Right.
And so, like, I don't know that we would have gotten Sorry to Bother You without Get Out, but I was hoping, because of the success of Get Out, we would start seeing more movies that dealt with race in a way that we've never seen before. Because a lot of movies in the past have dealt with race and dealt with race head on, but a lot of times they were dramas. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of like abstract. There wasn't a whole lot of like genre going on. I love the, you know, the sci-fi elements of this, the comedy elements of this, the horror elements of this. There's just, it's such an interesting hybrid. And I'm like, God, if we got Get Out last year and Sorry to Bother You and Black Panther and coming up the Black Klansman this year, like, look at where we're going, man. Look at the kind of films. I mean, I know times really suck, and, you know, it's without question the most racist time in our history I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Thank goodness art like this is being made, and I can't wait to see what happens next, the next film, you know, and the next.
And props for, I forget which studio ended up putting this out, but props for them to getting this in the big multiplexes.
I think this was an Annapurna.
Yeah, it was Annapurna. Yeah, they've been putting out interesting projects as well. And it was great that they get stuff like this on the screen. And it's not going to be, you know, I said this in my review. I'm like, this is not going to be a film for everyone, but we really got to try to break away from this mentality that has come to be that every movie released in the theater is meant for everyone.
No, not necessarily. I really don't think, I mean, why would you have 16 screens like the place I saw this at, and every single movie is supposed to appeal to every single person? I mean, that's not the point. Well, you know, the point is to have something for everyone. And oftentimes we really don't have something for everyone. Like every genre represented, and there's not like every age group represented, and, you know, every culture kind of represented. That's never going to happen at the multiplex. A lot of time it's just like 9 screens of the same type of stuff and 1 or 2 kind of side things that they can play because these other ones are going to make all the bank.
Right. And that's what I meant by it, you know, but I mean, I've seen some criticism out there as well, and I'm sitting there going, yeah, but this film wasn't meant for, you know, like Bad Moms Christmas, prime example. I liked the first Bad Moms. I went with my wife to see Bad Moms. And the crowd we were within was, go figure, majority was females, you know, except if they had their date with them, you know, a guy in there was usually on a date. And they were laughing it up. And then I got out and I started reading some reviews and people were like, oh, this movie sucks. Oh, I'm like, but the guys who were saying this movie sucks or it's just trash or I didn't get it at all were 20 something males.
Well, film criticism too is going through this thing where people are starting to really kind of realize now, and it's coming to the surface. The truth about film criticism is they are mostly like you and me, white men reviewing yep. films.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the biggest load of horseshit ever.
Yep.
And it's a really a show of privilege for someone to go, you know, why isn't everything for me? Because as a white male, most things are for you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't like see that and admit that, that is just a demonstration of the truth. You're just proving the point over. So if you go to the theater and you're not seeing like, you know, if there's movies that are like, oh, maybe this isn't for me. Why is that bang fist, cry, poop, pants? You know what I mean? They can't deal with it because they're used to that life, that life of privilege. You know, we see that word a lot because it's a very true kind of thing, whether or not you want to admit it. And I definitely look at the movies that Hollywood thinks, I look at everything that's being sold to me.
Yeah.
And a lot of time it's very, very offensive. You know, they think like I should be the Deadpool demographic, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, here's this dude going around cussing and shooting guns and all this CGI. And you're like, yeah, this is what you should like. And I'm going like, are you, this is what you think of all of me? Right. But I know that they're trying to appeal to like a wide base or whatever, you know, and for every step forward, movies like that can sometimes take. I heard Deadpool 2 has a same sex relationship amongst some of the characters, which I thought was wonderful. You know, they still do the garbage of, you know, like kidnapping or killing the girl friend or whatever in order to make their plot.
Right.
So, you know, it's still all these things. They just, dudes need to just relax and let other people have things. Is that okay for someone else to have something? It's going to have to be okay.
And I love watching everything, even if I didn't like it. There's some stuff I've watched that I just did not. I'm like, oh my God, why am I watching this? But at the same time, you know, I realize like watching some films, I'm like, this one, I'm enjoying it. Probably not as much as some, but I can't exactly crap on it because I'm not the target demographic for this. You know, rom-coms, my wife loves giving me a hard time about romantic comedies. I usually can't watch too many of them. There's some that I really enjoy, but a lot of them I just can't. But I'm like, I'm not the guy for this movie. Yeah. So, you know, I'm sitting here going, you know, do I, should I? And a lot of times I don't review the film because I'm sitting here going, I'm not the guy. I'm not the person for this film. I, you know, I could sure review it, but why when I'm not the target audience?
Yeah. Well, I like to think of it this way, and your listeners can, if they're still listening to me, you can just take this or leave this or buy into this concept or not. But when I watch a movie and I didn't like it, I feel like I made a mistake. It is not the fault of the movie. I feel like I mistakenly watched someone else's great film.
Mm-hmm.
I did not watch my great film. I watched someone else's, and that was my fault. That was an accident. Because how else could you explain the people that absolutely love this thing that I can't stand?
Yeah.
The thing I can't stand might not be bad. It's just not my good movie. It's their good movie. So that's on me, not on the movie. So leave it alone. That's my that's kind of my philosophy with it.
And don't get me wrong, folks. I'm not trying to be a hypocrite. I fully admit there are some movies that I have ranted on in that, and some of them I've gone off on, more of them when I was younger. But, you know, that I look back later and go, well, you know, that really wasn't for me. But at the same time, I'm sitting here going, yeah, I tell people that because there's some movies, too, that people loved that I was just like, eh. I'm like, hey, if that's what you saw, that's awesome. You know, yeah. More power to you. That's the movie you saw. I didn't see that film. It just didn't get, you know, I didn't get it. I didn't get what they were going for, or it was on me. I probably shouldn't have sat down and watched this movie because just from the trailers, I could tell it was probably not mine type of movie. Like Sausage Party, you know, the animated film Sausage Party. A lot of people loved Sausage Party. I didn't see it.
As a critic, though, and as a movie watcher, you get to know what you like and what you don't. And you kind of know when you're going to like something and when you're not. You know? I mean, it gets a little easier, doesn't it? If you're not an asshole, to kind of avoid the things that aren't good. I think I really have no respect for critics that go into watching a movie that they know they're probably not going to like just so they can shit on it later. I think a movie pass has made this a lot more easier, unfortunately. It's kind of like, you know, it's made me a little bit like, oh God, but you know, then again, what credibility do I have? I believe I came on your show last year and stuck up for the emoji, which hey, I've now seen 3 times and is by far not the worst children's movie that was released in major theaters.
No, it's not. And that was my defense of it. No, I admitted fully there's huge flaws in it, but I'm like, this film's not nearly as bad as the way people are making it out. And what's funny is now you have Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet. There, they have the exact same as some people complained about the gratuitous apps and the gratuitous name dropping and everything for the internet that was in the emoji movie is in Wreck-It Ralph Breaks the Internet. Yeah.
But you know, I'm going to go see Wreck-It Ralph, even though I'm not a fan of the first one. I'm going to go because of those princesses.
Oh, hell
that
yeah.
The scene with all the princesses, my kid went nuts. I'm like, could y'all just make the movie like that? Could y'all make like it's Disney owns them all. Why don't you just make the Avengers of princesses and get it over with already?
There you go. That was my favorite part of which one was it? Shrek 3 or whatnot? It was when the princesses banded together.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I don't know if Disney realizes the just jackpot explosion of cash they're sitting on with that one little scene in that trailer, what they could do.
Oh, yeah. I know that scene alone is probably pulling a lot of people in.
Oh, it has to be, man, because there's already like YouTube videos that analyze just that scene, like a 15-minute video. And of course, we watched it because, you know, of course,
of course.
Well, I know for a fact when I take my kid to this movie, she's going to be like, when are they coming back? That's all she's going to want to know is when the princess are coming back.
That's awesome. Well, I think we'll wrap it up here for tonight on Sorry to Bother You. It's a film that I am so happy that it got wide release and more people are seeing it. I think we need more films like this along with, and as I mentioned in my review, there's room in your multiplex for both films, both the popcorn, turn your brain off, and the holy crap, my brain is in overload mode.
Yeah, you have to talk to someone after you watch Sorry to Bother. You have to.
Part of the reason why I wanted to do this episode, because I had so many things sitting there rolling in my head. I'm like,
I went by myself and I like was telling everybody that I talked to the next day about it. Like I couldn't help it. You got to talk about it.
Yep. You do. And I'd recommend it to anybody and everyone. Go see a film like this, even if it, you know, sit there, just see it. you may come out of it and you may not like it, and there's nothing wrong with that, but at the same time, just pay attention to what's going on the screen, because, you know, films like this, you don't always get really at the multiplex that often. And it's great that we do seem to be getting just a trend of more of these films slowly but surely, because they are showing that they can make money, which is when it boils down to all Hollywood cares about. They very rarely care about the actual content of something, and if it's something that's going to make them greenbacks, that's all they care about. So I mean, that's what I'd recommend for Sorry to Bother You. Andrew, any final thought on Sorry to Bother You?
Just glad it exists, glad you saw it, glad I saw it, and I'm just happy it exists. Can't wait for what else it brings about. I enjoy knowing that it's out there. Makes me happy.
And it's films like this that I hope inspire more filmmakers out there to take chances and make the film they want to make, showing that, look, you can do this now, you know?
Yeah, and Boots Riley, if he never makes another movie, I mean, Sorry to Bother You, but it'd be hell of a mic drop, you know?
Yeah, that it would. That it definitely follow that. Would. So, Andrew, why don't you tell our fine listeners, those who have stuck with us tonight, and let them know where they can find your stuff at and what you got going on.
Well, thanks, man. This was a wonderful opportunity. I'm glad you did that, man. This is the real first actual conversation I had with somebody about this movie, so I appreciate it.
You bet, man.
My friends and I here in Athens, Georgia, make movies, and we are called Gonzorific, Gonzorific. RIFFIC. And you can watch some of our older stuff and some of our free little short things on YouTube. But what we would love for you to do, what we would love for you to do, is go to amazon.com/V/Gonzorific, GONZORIFFIC. Watch one of our movies. Our latest is called Space Boobs in Space.
Such a great title.
No, really. It's called Space Boobs in Space. Yeah, you know what's funny is like it's available in other countries too on Amazon. It's Prime, by the way. That's our Prime landing page. You can watch all that stuff. I see things on Twitter about Space Boobs in Space, and they're in like German and other languages. So I'm like, I don't want to translate it and find out that they didn't like it. It's like, I'm just going to leave this here. I don't want to hurt my feelings. Somebody in another country hates me, you know?
I don't think they hate you. If reputation precedes them in Germany, they probably love the fact that the film is called Space Boobs in Space. So,
oh, I hope that. Oh God, I can only hope that. You just made me feel great about it. Thank you. I may go translate it after all.
You're welcome. Well, thank you, folks. Go see. Sorry to bother you. It deserves to be seen in the theater, for the experience alone, just to see if anything, what the people around you, how they may receive this film. So, there you have it, folks. Can't wait to see what Boots Riley does next. And yeah, have a good evening, everyone.
Have a good evening, everyone.
'Hey, all my friends out there looking for more spoiler room goodness, then why don't you check out our brand new Patreon page, patreon.com/specialmarkproductions, where you can get access to exclusive spoiler room episodes and a whole lot more. You can also find us on Facebook groups at SMPRD and on the Twitter at specialmarkpro. Let your voice be heard and let us know what you would like to see in the spoiler room, as well as just how we're doing in general. We appreciate your support, and remember, in the spoiler room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.